Pujya Shri Guru Vargavandita Mahabhavanvitaya Sada Purvaparya Parampara Prachalita Prajya Pramurta Krite Bhakter Nirmala Nirjarasya Nibritang Sangrakakam Sadaram Vande Shri Guru Deva Manata Shira Acharya Varjam Nijam Gurva Vishta Supuratam Guru Ganaya Rishisha Sambhushitam Chintya Chintya Samasta Veda Nipunam Shri Rupa Panthanugam Govinda Vidamujjalam Bharatanum Bhaktyan Vitang Sundaram Vande Vishwagurun Chadivya Bhagavat Premnohi Bijapradam Shri Sarupuraya Rupa Jiva Bhavasam Varam Varna Ramanir Vishesha Sarva Loka Nistaram Shri Saraswati Priyancha Bhakti Sundarashrayam Shri Dharam Namami Bhakti Rakakam Jagat Gurum Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyavacha Patitanam Pavanibho Vaishnavebho Namo Nama Hari Purita Sundara Dutika Dambha Sanyukita Sadariraya Kandare Spuratu Vasha Chinandana Dasa Brindavanam Bande Krishna Dasa Prabhum Tata Chanavatara Chaitanya Lila Vistara Kari Nodo Nityananda Parabja Karunarina Bhushito Bhakta Chano Buddha Chintyo Bhavande Basarupino Shri Guru Gaura Gandharva Govindas Chaganai Sahajayati Patakas Chatra Sarve Shankarunartina Shriyatang Shriyatang Nityang Giyatang Giyatang Buddha Chintayang Chintayang Bhakta Chaitanya Charitamritam Jai. Shri Chaitanya Charitamritam Ki Jai. So we're in Madhyalila chapter 25. This former disciple of Prakashananda Saraswati is now more or less humiliating his own guru with the mercy and knowledge he got from Mahaprabhu, quoting shlokas from Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and other places to convince his guru that he's wrong and a great sinner. And we heard about some elaborate purport upon some of these expressions from Nasi Maharaj yesterday. Very nice. I like Nasi Maharaj's style because he does not really like repeating things. He's like meditating upon truths and like expressing his heart as per what like he feels at that time and through his experience. So it's like every class I hear from him is always different and fresh. I like his style very, very much. So we heard his, you know, these sort of things coming from these Bhagavatam shlokas, Bhagavad Gita shlokas from him. But within the context of Charitamrita and the Leela and, you know, the theme of the work, there's also points to be made to understand what's being revealed by the scripture directly. So the Brahman, basically he's saying that the word Brahma is really a name of Bhagavan. And to say that Brahma is nirvishesh, is non-differentiated and impersonal, and that which is to imply that there is no personality of Godhead or divine pastimes in the spiritual world, this is contrary to the verdict of the scriptures and laughable to those who actually know the scriptures. And someone who does this and considers such divine things to be mundane, they're a very great sinner. And then he's quoting Bhagavatam shlokas, Gita shlokas, where Krishna himself, Brahma, are saying, those who do not respect the Lord, who do not have faith in the Lord, they go to hell, they're the greatest fools in this world, etc. Sutra parinamavad tahanamaniya vivartavad stape vaya brantavaliya. Not accepting the transformation of energy, Shankaracharya has tried to establish the theory of illusion under the plea that Vasudev has made a mistake. So, another name of Mayavad is Vivartavad. Vivarta means like mistaken illusion. So mistaken illusionism, saying that what appear, you know, that everything we see in this world is an illusion and really, you know, none of it truly exists. It's like this phantasmagorical you know, illusory play going on before our deluded consciousness. Whereas our conception, the teachings of Vasudeva are called Parinamavad. Parinama means transformation. So it means that there is a supreme truth, there is a divine being, but that he can transform some aspect of himself to appear as material, to appear as mundane, to put on this show called the world. Which is to say that the Lord can have multiple potencies. We know them to be the illusory potency of Maya as well as the divine potency of Yoga Maya. The ism that accepts these multiple energies of God that can work simultaneously is called Parinamavad, which literally means, you know, the ism that believes that the supreme divine being and his energy can transform and behave in different ways simultaneously. So this Brahman is saying that the teachings of the scriptures teach Parinamavad, but Shankaracharya, he did not accept this, and he invented his own theory called Vivartavad, called total illusionism, and basically implying that Vedavyasa and those who wrote the scriptures were mistaken. So the Brahman is implying that if you accept Shankaracharya, then you have to reject the whole of the direct meaning of the Vedic literature. They're that opposed in connotation. Eta kalpita artamanena hibai shastrachari ku kalpana pashande bujai. Sripad Shankaracharya has given his interpretation an imaginary meaning. It does not actually appeal to the mind of any sane man. He has done this to convince the atheists and bring them under his control. Paramartha bichar gilan karimatravad kaha mukti pavu kaha krishnera prasad. The atheists, headed by the Mayavadi philosophers, do not care for liberation or Krishna's mercy. They simply continue to put forward false arguments and counter-theories to atheistic philosophy, not considering or engaging in spiritual matters. Paramartha bichar gela karimatravad means they don't actually aspire to realize the truth, but only to discuss it in newer and newer ways. Their enthusiasm, their intent is purely on the intellectual plane. They're not actually discussing the truth in the hope of realizing it, but they're discussing it only for the sake of discussion and for the sake of propagating discussion and satisfying their egos by being able to discuss it in more or novel, elaborate ways amongst each other. And such persons, they never obtain liberation or Krishna's mercy. Like, they talk all day all about liberation, and you know what? None of them ever get liberation. What to speak of Krishna's mercy? They don't get anything. They don't get anything except their own delusions and their own, you know, nonsensical, egoistic satisfaction by being able to temporarily outsmart each other. There's a shloka at the end of the first chapter of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where Rupa Goswami, he's beginning his book, and then he explains the general overall nature of devotion and the general overall nature of rasa. And then before he goes into his more like elaborate explanation of everything, he says, so may this rasa come and quench the fire on the flaming tongue of the intellectuals, the Mayavadis, you know, may their flaming tongues be, you know, pacified by this rasa. You know, this rasa is the only thing that will come to shut them up and, you know, make them feel something so satisfying that they'll finally forego all their materialistic intellectual activity. So this is Rupa Goswami's like prayer. May this rasa, this ocean of bhakti rasa, may a little bit of this, may they just drink a little, and may that put out the fire on their tongue of nonsensical argumentation. Vasa Sutra Artha Acharya Kariyache Achyadan Ehoi Satya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Vachan. The conclusion is that the import of the Vedanta Sutra is covered by the imaginary explanation of Shankaracharya. Whatever Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said is perfectly true. So he's saying, he's concluding and he's saying, all Shankaracharya's then has covered over the actual meaning, the actual purpose, the actual spiritual substance within the Vedanta Darshan, and covered it over with all his nonsense and bewildered everyone. But Mahaprabhu, what he's saying, you know, then it's contrasting. Ehoi Satya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Bachan. But what Mahaprabhu is saying, that's the truth. What Mahaprabhu is saying is what the Vedanta Sutra is really saying. If you can come out from the deluding influence of Shankaracharya's interpretation, what Mahaprabhu is saying is the real verdict of the scriptures. Chaitanya Gosai Jai Kohe Se Matasar Arajatamata Se Sava Charakar. Whatever meaning Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives is perfect. And any other interpretation is only a distortion. Very nice slogan. Krishna Chaitanya Gosai Jai Kohe. What Chaitanya Gosai says, same with the sar. That is the best. That is the essence. That's what it really is about. Then Ara Jatta Matta Sei Sava Charakar. And what anyone else is arguing, what anyone else is inventing, imagining, it's all, you know, distorted nonsense. Very nice. Say Matasar, Ara Jatamata Sei Sava Charakar. You got Sar and Charakar. Charakar means nonsensical distortion. Sar means the like cream best essence. This is that type of differences there. So, you know, when Prakashananda, someone first mentioned, you know, Prakashananda is standing here in front of like hundreds of his disciples, and one of his own followers is like, you don't know anything, you've been completely bewildered by a nonsense, you cannot understand the meaning of the scriptures, and you're going to hell. He's like telling this in front of all his followers and everything. And this is like radical, you know, and he's like Bhagavatam, like right in the middle, like, this is like, you know, on an intellectual plane, this is like some, like, you know, action movie, like, like, Matrix fight, you know, he's just like, like, humorously, thoroughly, humiliatingly defeating this guy, like, so bad. No, Mahaprabhu's not here at this time. This devotee got mercy from Mahaprabhu, and then he's appearing, and like, you know, but we know previously, Prakashananda, to all his followers, when someone first came in his assembly and mentioned Mahaprabhu, Prakashananda is like, you know who this guy is? He's like some kind of traveling gypsy who knows some kind of magic that makes people think he's God. Like, he doesn't know the scriptures, he doesn't know anything, he's just this like emotional, you know, gypsy magician. You know, like, don't even mention his name here. Like, this is ridiculous. You know, he was like that type of like dismissal of Mahaprabhu. You know, so now, like, not that much later, some guy's coming into his assembly, like, and in the name of Mahaprabhu, like, all this Siddhanta just like defeating the, you know, like, complete, you know, like, Prakashana is trying to say, oh, he doesn't know anything, he's, you know, he's irrelevant and for emotions and mystics and this type, you know, and then with like full Siddhanta, this guy's just like cracking him back in the name of Mahaprabhu. So, Eta Kohi Se Kare Krishna Sankirtan Shuni Prakashananda Kichu Kahina Bachan. After saying this, the disciple, or we could say former disciple, of Prakashananda Saraswati began to chant the holy name of Krishna. Hearing this, Prakashananda Saraswati made the following statement. Acharjera agraha adita bad stapite tate sucharta vakya kari anyarite. He said, Shankaracharya was very eager to establish the theory of monism or literally it says Advaitavad, means the conclusion of non-dualism, monism. Therefore, he explained the Vedanta Sutra, or the Vedanta philosophy, in a different way to support monistic philosophy. Bhagavata manilaya deitana jayastapan atev sava shastra kare kandan. If one accepts Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead, the philosophy that maintains that God and the living entity are one cannot be established. Therefore, Shankaracharya argued against and refuted all kinds of revealed scriptures. So, Prakashananda Singh, Shankaracharya came to establish absolute monism. So he interpreted the scriptures in a way that reflects that, and because the conclusion of Bhagavat and the conclusion of Advaita are completely irreconcilable, then he explained the scriptures in a different way, because of the, it's impossible to have both of them exist. They're diametrically opposed conclusions, that there's an eternal Lord who has innumerable eternal servants, or there's only one homogeneous, it's completely opposite ideas. So, it's clear. Jai granta karta chahe, se svatta stapite, shastrera sahaja arta nahi taha hoite. Anyone who wants to establish his own opinion or philosophy certainly cannot explain any scripture according to the principle of direct interpretation. Mimamsaka kohe ishara hoy karmera anga sankhya kohe jagatera prakrita karana prasanga. The Mimamsaka philosophers conclude that if there is a God, he is subject to our fruitive activities. Similar, the Sankhya philosophers who analyze the cosmic manifestation say that the cause of the cosmos is material nature. Okay, so what's happening? Right? This guy is just like throwing all this Bhagavad Siddhanta at Prakashananda. And then what's Prakashananda doing? He's taking it completely intellectually. He's saying, yes, this conclusion is different than this conclusion. And here are these other philosophers who've given this, and he's like, he's just talking about ideas. Now he's going to list all the different darshans, the six darshans, and explain how all of them are they're all interpreting the scriptures in their own way. And to establish one conclusion, you have to interpret the scriptures differently than another. So what's he all about? He's not about the truth. He's not about realizing or experiencing something beyond or something absolute. He's just all about theories and talking about theories. So someone's coming at him like with faith, like direct, and he's saying, yes, this is a theory among others, such as the, and he's talking for so long, but he's not actually answering or refuting or doing anything. He's just trying to imply that all forms of interpretation are relative, which we see everywhere, especially in at least where we're from in America, is so prevalent. You explain something, the spirit, nature of spiritual reality is like this. Oh, that's nice. Thank you for your opinion. This other man has another opinion. I also have an opinion. And I'm entitled to my opinion. That's the underlying assumption that people are, clinging to with all their might, that they don't realize it. Their ego is so riveted to its apparent freedom that. Anyway, so we can see even, in our, modern day, the way we deal with it, but even in the old days, even with the real pundits, it's the same thing. It's just more like elaborate form, Like nowadays, it's just like, I'm free to, imagine God to be who I want him to be, or, so many, new age or types of interpretations. But back then, they had all these, super intelligent guys who had, really intense invented theories. like now you got these guys mixing, it's like they weren't even as good at that as these guys were. Anyway, the point is, Shankaracharya can't refute anything the guy said. all he can do is try to say, oh yeah, that's all correct, but it's relative. That's all he can say. Which is one type of defeat. Like, I obviously don't know them all, but in Naya Shastra, like in the scriptures of logic and argument, I forget how many, it's like 24 or 21. There's 21 different things that imply defeat in debate. You know, one of them is changing the subject. Like, which you see everywhere, you know. As soon as someone changes the subject, they just got defeated. They're still arguing with you, but they just got defeated. So, you see that one happen. I forget the name of it. But there's like so many ways, like someone, you know, and in the real, like, when people had like dignity and stuff like that, if they were talking and somebody changed the subject, then another guy would be like, hey bro, you know, like, you just, you know, like, are you a sincere man? Do you realize you've just been taught something? Will you accept that? Or are you just going to egotistically start trying to establish something else and, like, think that you know more? Anyway, so now Pragashananda is going to give all these different relative interpretations of the Absolute. And he's saying, yes, there is this conclusion known as the Bhagavat Siddhanta, that there's an Absolute Personality of Godhead. And that is opposed to Shankaracharya's teachings that everything is all one homogeneous substance. And it's natural that, you know, that he will have to interpret the scriptures in a particular way to can give this conclusion. There are also Mimamsaka philosophers. They've also argued that the notion of God is like a personification of the law of karma. And they say karma is absolute. And for everything there's an action and reaction, and what you call God, that's just your like invented what do you call it? When you humanize something, what is that called? Anthropomorphication. There's another word, I forget. But you know, when you invent and give personality to an abstract principle that, you know, for those in the unintelligent section who can't understand, you know, cause and effect, let them believe in this. Blah blah blah. Then you have Samkhya philosophy, saying Jagatera Prakriti Karana Prasanga. You know, that who is God? That's just the original cause of the creation, the unmoved mover of Aristotle, blah blah blah, an abstract principle. Naya kohe paramanu hoite vishvahoy, mayavadini vishesh brahmi hetu koi. The followers of Naya, the philosophy of logic, maintain that the atom is the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and the mayavadi philosophers maintain that the impersonal Brahman effulgence is the cause of the cosmic manifestation. So then, these other people, they say that, you know, the only absolute principle is the notion of an individual unit, and that everything's made up of these indivisible units. And then you have others who say there's, you know, a non-differentiated impersonal energy that gives rise to differentiated, you know, experience. Patanjali koi ishar hoy sarup gyan, vedamate koi tar sayam bhagavan. The followers of Patanjali say that when one is self-realized, he understands the Lord. Or that really the whole notion of God or God realization is the same thing as self-realization. If you can just realize yourself, then you'll understand who you are and how everything is. And your life will be perfect. So the idea of an absolute or an ultimate goal is really just realizing yourself, becoming situated in, you know, self-realization. And what everybody talks about as God, that's just this label or this idea that really means, you know, realizing who you are. You know, through this and this, you know, method of self-regulation known as Ashtanga Yoga, etc. So another, you know, semi-atheistic way of skewing things. And then here, similarly, according to the Vedic principles, the original cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, and also it's true, the ancient Vedas, the literal meaning says that there is this personality of Godhead, this personal Lord himself, you know, but he's like making all this wash. Like, yeah, it's true, that's the meaning of the Vedas, but really this personality that they're talking about, it just means this cause, or this energy, or this state of being. And all this relative mixing he's showing over the what the Brahmin has said to him. Chayera Chaimata Vas Koila Avartan Se Sava Sutra Lanya Vedanta Varnan. After studying these six philosophical theses, Vasudev completely summarized them all in the aphorisms of Vedanta philosophy. So like in the Search for Sri Krishna, there's that chapter called The Six Philosophies of India, which was compiled from a talk that Srila Sridharmaraj gave about a song from Sharanagati, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur is praying, and he says, Tova Pada Vismriti. I don't remember, but like in the song he says, like, my Lord, I've forgotten your lotus feet, and for that I'm burning in the fire of material existence. And as I'm suffering and burning in this terrified condition, all these nomads and gundas and cheaters are coming to help me. Like Buddha, Gautama, Jaimini, and it's like a song, like saying all these guys who invented all these theories and all these intellectual studies, they're just gundas, man. And they're exploiting people in impoverished conditions. That's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song. So then, it says the first line, Keshava Tua Jagata Vichitra, like, my Lord, this world is so strange. It's so variegated and like a labyrinth of perplexity. I can't even believe it. And I'm just, suffering in this place, and all the things that are supposed to be good or valued or help, they're all actually coming to exploit me. And I'm just like awash in this, like, help me, please. This type of mood of desperation and prayer. And then Srila Sridharmaraj, once when he was talking about this song, he also gave some discussion of the actual, short explanation of the teachings of those individual persons. And then they parsed that and made a chapter about philosophy. But actually it's about, that what Srila Sridharmaraj was actually talking about was like the soul's, this devotional thing, but within that there were these, it's very nice, I'm not trying to, it's very wonderful. But that's the overall context, like that it's not all in the book, but that's the genesis of that discussion. Anyhow, so Prakashananda here is also saying, that these different, the six darshans, or here they're called philosophical theses, were all discussed, and they're all summarized in Vedanta. Okay. Vedanta mate brahma sakara nirupan. Nirguna vyatireke tiho hoita sagun. According to Vedanta philosophy, the absolute truth is a person. When the word, quote, nirgun, which literally means, here it says, without qualities, is used, it is to be understood that the Lord has qualities that are totally spiritual. So, Vedanta mate brahma sakara nirupan. Sakara means with form. Akar means a form. So sakar means with a form. So he's saying, Vedanta mate. What has the Vedanta, the summary of all the darshans, given? They've given that Brahma, it has form. Brahma, he's saying, Prakashananda himself is even admitting, it's true. What the Vedanta has taught is that Brahma does have form. And though he's described as nirgun, he really is sagun. Gun means qualities. So he's saying it's true that he's described as nirgun, but that is describing him indirectly. That's saying, meaning that's describing that he has no mundane quality. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't have spiritual quality. Even Prakashananda is making this statement. So, he's showing some symptoms of understanding something of Mahaprabhu's, of what the Brahmin told him. Paramakarane ishara keho nahimane swasamatastapke paramatrena kandane. Of the philosophers mentioned, none really cares for the personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. They are always busy refuting the philosophical theories of others and establishing their own. So none of these people who present all these theories, they don't really bow down to the supreme absolute controller or seek to know him, but only to theorize about him amongst each other. Tate chaya darshana hoite tatpanahi jani mahajana jay kohe se satyamani. By studying the six philosophical theories, one cannot reach the absolute truth. It is therefore our duty to follow the path of the Mahajans. Whatever they say should be accepted as the supreme truth. So, if you just study all these different people whose only motivation is to argue with each other, how are you ever going to realize the ultimate cause of all of their arguments? It's impossible. It'll never happen. So what do? Mahajan Jekoi say satyamani. You just have to accept what a Mahajan says, what a great personality says. So, in this context, who is a Mahajan? A Mahajan is someone who has some realization of the truth, a Tattvadarshi, or even you could say someone who just wants to realize the truth as opposed to simply argue and speculate about him. You can appreciate and follow someone in that line of thought. And now Prakashananda quotes Yudhisthira Maharaj, Tarko pratishta shrutayo vibhinha nasavrishiryasya matam nabhinam dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajano jenagatha sapanta. Dry arguments are inconclusive. A great personality whose opinion does not differ from others is not considered a great sage. Simply by studying the Vedas, which are variegated, one cannot come to the right path by which religious principles can be understood. The solid truth of religious principles is hidden in the heart of an unadulterated, self-realized person. Consequently, one should accept whatever progressive path the Mahajans advocate. Very famous shloka, quoted by Mahaprabhu himself in other places, from the conversation between Yudhisthira and Dharmaraj in the form of a bird, which is, we all know, has been published in a number of our books. Very nice shloka, saying, Tarko Pratishta means apratishta, means pratishta we know means some established position. So apratishta means non-established position. And tarka means intellectual argument, or establishing logically consistent conclusions. So just by stringing together a theory formed by a series of logical conclusions, that doesn't establish the truth. I can say, I assume premise A, and conclusions B, C, D, E, and F follow from that. Does that mean they're true? Does that mean they have any relevance to anything? Does that mean they will fill your heart with ecstasy? Like, no. It just means that they're the natural conclusions from a premise you assume. Or like maybe in geometry you learned about postulates. So dry argument has no ability to establish truth. Truth pre-exists argument. It pre-assists the assumption you made about it. So in one of the last sutras of Vedanta itself is cited here. It says Tarko Pratishtanat, which means that nothing can be actually established by argument. Argument can only, if it's, like we can say for our Siddhanta, our argument, our conclusions, our knowledge, they reflect and express the truth and nature of what already is. And because we have faith in them, and because we're conditioned souls, by having faith in them, by understanding them, we come to understand the truth that they express. But that truth is their origin and their genesis. Not that they themselves made the truth, but that the truth made the argument. That's called revelation. When the truth itself expresses itself in the form of an argument, expresses itself in the form of an idea, expresses itself in the form of a word. That's called revelation. When, an idea or some words are used to try to describe the truth, that's called speculation. That's called argumentation. And if you pick up a book, is it one or is it the other, right? You can't say. They're just words and ideas on the page. Do they come from the illusion and are being projected onto the truth? Do they come from the truth and are they being revealed into the illusory world? Just by analyzing the concepts there with your own head, there's no way to tell. The only means by which to ascertain that is not with the intellect itself, but with the heart and you know, ultimately by Sukriti, that truth is revealed to one, not intellectually. So Tarko Pratishtanat, argument itself cannot establish anything. Shrutayo Vibhinha, and what the scriptures, what has been speculated or said about the truth, is so variegated. You know, Vibhinha means has variegated parts. You know, but you know, if you flush that out, it means you have mutually exclusive, contradictory speculations. It means you've got one guy saying this, and you've got another guy saying the opposite in the name of the same thing. That's the reality of this world, right? That's why so many intellectual people are bewildered by religion. Because this religion will say, do this or you go to hell. Another guy will say, do that or the opposite will happen. You know, like this comes up in Bengal, because some of the Muslims here in Bengal quote certain portions of the Quran that say that you must perform certain sacrifices or else you go to hell, some of which involve killing animals and offering them to Allah. So you've got a book that says, unless you kill this, you know, animal or cow and offer to Allah, you go to hell. And then you've got our scripture saying, if you kill a cow, you go to hell. Add that up. Doesn't add. Right? It cancels out. Because you've got one saying the opposite and you're saying the exact opposite. So what are you going to do? If you're an intellectual, you're going to just not bother with this because you're not going to get anywhere. There's nowhere to go. It cancels out intellectually. So you have to, ultimately, to proceed in one's spiritual path and proceed towards the higher truth, one has to have some sukriti. One has to have some good fortune, some mercy, and something has to be revealed within the heart for that truth to actually be established. You know, and you can have two pundits sit there and yell at each other till the end of the universe. You know, it doesn't go anywhere on a merely intellectual level. So that's why this shloka is saying, or well, as it comes to Mahajan, that's why you have to follow a personification of the truth. You have to come in connection with someone who's living the truth and expressing it. And also, how does that happen? Through sukriti, through mercy, through prayer. But before that's mentioned, the shloka is saying, so, argument itself can't establish anything, and all the arguments are completely variegated. Argument doesn't establish anything, and you've got completely contradictory arguments. Nasav rishi yasya matam nabinam. And all these rishis, all these big guys who are saying all these things, why are they saying it? To become a big guy who says big things. You know, unless you say something different from somebody else, you're never going to become a big guy. Whoever became famous by saying nothing of his own? Nobody. Philosophically, you're nobody. Like, you study philosophy and, you know, you learn all these names, you know, like, for Hegel it was like this, but Kant saw it in this way, and then Hegel, you know, had his own vision, you know, blah, 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 and you got these guys running around, you know, like, forever, comparing and contrasting different philosophical worldviews, you know, but how do you become one of those guys that they always talk about? By seeing it in another way that they can then start to analyze and compare with the other guys. You know, if you just come along and say, I think Hegel's philosophy is great, I just see everything the way Hegel does, then you're a philosophical nobody. So, nasav rishir yasya matam nabinam. So, no one ever becomes a rishi by being a follower. In this context, there's rishi has many meanings, and there's a good meaning of the word rishi, in the sense that, generally, a rishi literally means a seer. So technically, in a positive light, a rishi means a seer of the truth, who's then described and is a channel of revelation, who's presented the truth in the form of knowledge for others to access and appreciate. That's what a real rishi is. But, you know, in the general context, or the social context, a rishi just becomes a person who propounded a particular theory, worldview, or type of knowledge. So in the way Yudhisthira Maharaj, you know, we've heard Gurudev comment on this shloka, you know, what is the gist of Yudhisthira Maharaj's expression? That if I just try to read the books, I'll never understand anything. That's what Yudhisthira Maharaj is saying. Like the gist of what he's saying. Logic, argument, you know, scriptural writers, scriptural, you know, all this, he's putting all these ideas together. What does it really mean? It just means, Yudhisthira Maharaj is saying, if you just try to understand it by reading alone, you don't get anywhere. That's the gist of Yudhisthira Maharaj's argument. Dharmasya tattva. Where is the truth of dharma? Or, you know, dharma you could say means religion, or you could say means just the actual nature of reality. How am I going to get to that which is the origin of all these things and is said to be revealed by all these contradictory things? How am I going to get in connection with that? You know? Well, where is it? You know, it's here it says nihitam guhayam. It exists in the heart. Guha literally means a hidden place, or it implies like a cave or an unknown place. It means, so for the intellectual, the heart is like this unknown other place. So, you know, he's saying all these intellectuals, but where is the actual tattva? Where is the actual thing? It's somewhere else. It's in this other place. It's in your heart. Not in, you know, this is what Yudhisthira Maharaj, you know. Yudhisthira Maharaj is like so intelligent and so great and like the king of the world. You know, but even he is saying like, oh, this gyan makes me crazy. Like, it's just in my heart, you know. Like sometimes, you know, intellectual people will consider, you know, sentimentalism or fanaticism, you know, so many things. Like, you know, really, even the smartest guys, ultimately, they're like that. Ultimately, even the smartest guys, they're like, hey, man, I just feel it, you know? You don't have to be shy to say that, you know? I don't know if this is politically correct, but like, sometimes you have, like, ladies, they'll just be like, I just feel it in my heart, that guru, you know? I was hearing some tape of Gurudev the other day, old tape from, like, 90, and some ladies, like, asking all these questions of Gurudev. And then like Bimala comes in and she's like, you know, I don't know exactly what she means, but what you're saying, I just feel it in my heart, and I just know that you're right. Like trying to say to the other lady, like, get over it, you know. Like, and then, you know, sometimes like proud people want to be like, oh, this is just, you know, this is just the uneducated section. They, you know, harmonize with it. But really, it's true. When it really comes down to it, that's actually more real and true than all this blah 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 da 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 da. Like, that's actually higher, really. You know, even Yudhisthira, even all the big guys, that's what they ultimately really say also. Anyhow, so, and what is the implication of that? The implication of that is Maha Jana Jena Gata Sapanta, that really, we'll follow that line. Like, you know, we'll keep it in harmony with all these aspects of knowledge, but really, what's in the heart of the person, and what I feel in my heart to be in his heart, that's really how I'm going to proceed. That's the line. Panta means the path. How am I to proceed? By going after, by proceeding as those have. You know, so one meaning of the shloka also is Yudhisthira saying, I can't understand anything intellectually. I just have to understand it through my heart. And that's the real way. That's the way of the Mahajans, is to abandon the intellectual side. You could also twist it like that. But the main idea more is that the path that's taught by the personifications of the truth, by the people who have the qualities, who are symptomatic of the realization of truth, will proceed in their line. Meaning, so many people might say this or argue that, but what is their actual realization? What is the actual quality of their experience? Only if they have some substantial, you know, quality of life, for lack of a better term, am I going to really be interested in what they say? You know, like I always found it interesting, like, if you learn philosophy in a university, you have all these guys, like, you're talking about all these ideas of all these men. But then if you like do any like biographical research on the people whose ideas you're talking about, they were all like at a young age abandoned or like lived a life of like frustration, you know, like they almost all were like totally unhappy in their lives and like came up with these crazy theories due to like their terrible lives, you know, like that. I don't know, I can't think of any examples, but like some of the people, like especially like Nietzsche and that one of those other Germans, I forget, but like their lives were like documented to like suck. And they like throughout their life were like perceived like unhappy, unsatisfied, unruly, unsociable individual, you know. But all these people are like sitting around like, but he's, it's just like, who cares what that guy said? Like, he's just some puggle guy at a coffee shop. Like, what the heck do we care what he says at all? You know, his life sucked, man. It totally sucked. Like, why am I going to care what he said? Or, like, maybe he interpreted something in some new way. But, like, what difference does it make? It wasn't fulfilling. It wasn't worthwhile. It's not what I want to taste.
And then he died.
And then he died, exactly. You know, so that's the difference, right? We see throughout our scriptures, throughout, right from the very beginning, Bhagavad Gita, you know, it never describes the position of the speaker of the truth, or the position or the nature of the truth without describing the symptoms of its realization. There's a system. Like if you look in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the treatises of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they don't say anything without qualifying characteristics. Like, you know, anything. This is a like concept A. Concept A produces B, C, E, and F always. If it doesn't produce B, C, and E, and F, it's not A. That system is always used. Like, what is sadhana bhakti? Sadhana bhakti means this, and if it's really there, this and this will be there too. Bhava bhakti is this. Without these, it's not there. You know, prema bhakti is this, prerequisites are X, Y, and without B and C, it's not prema bhakti. Always, there's some classification. You know, so, I mean, they're saying, ultimately, you know, it's in the heart, but it's not just like, and I feel ecstasy and joy. It's like, none of our gurus ever said that. If they used one word, it was defined in a system based on all the others. Like for Rupa Goswami, the word love, the word affection were all technical terms that had meanings and symptoms and characteristics. And not one description they gave of a pastime, of a lila, of a stage of consciousness was like, just like some culturally connotated idea, ever. So, even in Bhagavad Gita, you know, it's talking like there's the whole chapter, the divine and the demoniac, and then all the qualities given of the two. You know, or in Bhagavatam, you know, for instance, in the third canto, Kapila Dev's teachings, it's one of the first places in Bhagavatam where extreme emphasis on sadhu sangha is placed. But there's almost an entire chapter describing qualifications of a sadhu. Like, there's like all these, like, the sadhu is this, the sadhu is, you know, it's just like, hooray, hooray, hooray for the sadhu who's like so supreme, you know. But then the next chapter is like, but who is really that? And then it's like, so many qualifications, characteristics, etc. There's always the symptoms of that, of something being of that nature. So, to, you know, have realization of the truth, to have a position of authority, one necessarily must have some proper symptoms that are natural for such a position. So, Maha Jana Jena Gata Sapanta. So, those who are exhibiting the symptoms of this hidden truth, who follow them? Those who have realization, and that realization is manifest and shining throughout their life, throughout their example, throughout their behavior, when they're in public, when they're in private, when they're hungry, when they're tired, when they're well-fed, anywhere and everywhere. It's real. Like, it's not just a bunch of words or like a socially created thing. It's like an actual state of being that someone must exemplify and be symptom of to really be honored as having. That's the difference between, you know, organized religion and spiritual culture. and organize your thing. This institution possesses authority over these teachings. It's like, why? Do the people who are propounding them, do they have realization of them or not? That's the only thing that's authoritative, is substance. Nothing's authoritative except the substance itself, because that's what the whole thing is about. So if someone might externally be attributed with authority, but if they're not symptomatic of that state of being that they're described as having, then they have no authority on a spiritual level. They have authority on a social level, but spiritually they don't, because they never did. Because they haven't come to that stage. So this is saying, you know, that dharmasya tattvam, the real nature, the real realization is in the heart. And that those who have that real realization, who are substantially situated, you know, their teachings, what they say, that's real. That's what will follow. Not all these speculators, not all these guys who invented so many things, but the guys who really are tasting it and experiencing it and have it, will follow them. So this is, you know, the Dharmaraj asked Yudhisthira Maharaj four questions, one of which was Kim Panta, which literally means, what is the way? Like, what should I do with my life? How do I pursue my own good? You know, what's the proper way to live my life? And this, you know, Maha Jena Gata Sapanta. Sapanta means, that's the way. Maha Jana Jena Gata means going like the Mahajans did. That's the way. You know, he could have said so many things, but that's the gist. His, you know, even in Mahabharata, you're getting this shloka giving Sadhu Sangha as supreme. You know, he's not even saying, like, chanting Harinam, worshipping the personality of Godhead, that's not the way. Following the Sadhu, that's the way. Okay, anyway, I got a little too much on that one. Lost our theme. So, who's telling the shloka? Anyone? Who's told that shloka in the book? Who was speaking before? Did I completely lose everyone?
Prakashananda.
Prakashananda, correcto. So, Prakashananda is saying, you know, all these different people, they've all speculated in all these different ways, but really the Vedanta says that, you know, if you leave aside all this indirect speculation, really it's true that the Vedanta says that the Supreme Absolute has form, but all these different people, they're just interested in establishing their conclusions. They're not really interested in the Lord Himself. So if you just study all these speculative conclusions, you don't really get the truth. But what the Mahajans say, what the people who are, you know, interested in spiritual transformation and realization, what they say, that's going to be true. So argument, scriptural rhetoric, you know, in big theorists, I'm not interested in any of them. I'm interested in the association of those who sincerely pursue experience of the higher world and are symptomatic of such experience. Them I will follow and appreciate. So now, Prakashananda finishes here. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Vani Amritera Dhar Teho De Kohe Bastu Se Tat Basar Hare Krishna. The words of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are a shower of nectar. Whatever he concludes to be the ultimate truth is indeed the summum bonum of all spiritual knowledge. Harivo! Mahaprabhu, what he says, say tat vasar. Whatever he says is the truth, it is the truth. Why? Because Mahaprabhu, he's over flooded with the ecstasy of that nature. He's experiencing the truth. He's completely symptomatic, you know. It's not in the Charitamrita or the Chaitanya Bhagavad, but you can say some more things from this pastime were revealed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his book. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur added some conversation between Prakashananda and Mahaprabhu in other places. And one Shloka Gurudev tells many times it's in Harinam Chintamani about their conversation. And Prakashananda is described also in Jiva Dharma, it's referred to. you know, it's saying after Prakashananda is defeated by Mahaprabhu, then he's like, you know, he's defeated and he accepts, but like, he's kind of just in his own, you know, later that day, that night, when he's going to, you know, he's just like reeling. He's like, what's this going to mean? Like, have all these followers of, you know, my life, you know, he's just like thinking, like, what am I going to do with my life now, you know, like, and he's realizing, like, he's thinking, I need to go back to Mahaprabhu. I need to get Mahaprabhu to tell me, you know, how to reorganize my life. So he's thinking, okay, you know, how am I going to find Mahaprabhu? And then he remembers, Mahaprabhu, he goes to bathe every day in the river. So I'll just stand on the path to the river, and at some point he'll come by, and then I'll get a chance to talk with him, and, you know, I won't be in front of all the people and everything, just on by the side of the river, no problem. I'll just get a chance to talk with him privately, I'll get everything straightened out, you know. So then he's, like, waiting beside the river in the morning, and, like, the sun's coming up, very beautiful sunrise situation, and then all of a sudden he hears some kirtan coming, some cartels, and then he's waiting, and then Mahaprabhu come, and like all of a sudden, you know, in the distance he sees Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu's just like full, like ecstatic, leading a parikrama, like, you know, dancing, like full, you know, like that one painting that Gurudev loves of Mahaprabhu, like, you know, something like that, like full kirtan, like all these people, and they're all like going to the Ganges to bathe in the morning, you know, like Udila Aruna Purava Bhagi Dwijamani Gaura Amani, you know, and the sun, the saffron colored sun is on the horizon, the Mahaprabhu is dancing, his frame, you know, Preme Dala Dala Sona, you know, his Mahaprabhu's form is intoxicated with prem, his ankle bells are tinkling, the mridanga bells are ta-da-da-dum, and the cartels dum-da-dum, and the ankle bells, and he's like swaying in an intoxicated mood in the morning on the way to the river, you know, and Prakashananda's like astounded, you know, he thought like Mahaprabhu would take a bath, you know, it's like, oh my god, like this like ecstatic parikrama is going on early in the morning, you know, like, he saw when Mahaprabhu met him, it was like in the middle of the afternoon, you know, so okay, I can understand, in the middle of the day, this guy might have like a big thing going, but like, no, he's like, further, his mind is blown, like, 4 or 5, 6 or whatever in the morning, he's like, fully charged, and coming, and then, you know, he just starts crying, and Jayavadharma is saying, the price limit, he just, they just finishes him like that even more. And before, intellectually, he was defeated, everything defeated. He saw Mahaprabhu's divinity, but like that, like, not just like Mahaprabhu, the Lord, Narayan, but like Mahaprabhu in his own Leela, in his own position, like his kirtan, some kirtan, you know, it's like, this really went into his heart. And then, you know, he's like crying and sitting, and he's just like, you know, overwhelmed with the mercy of Mahaprabhu. And then Mahaprabhu sees him, and then after he bathes, they talk again, you know, and Prakashananda is just like, how are you like this? Like, what is going on? You're so ecstatic. You're so over flooded with this divine experience. You know, what is this? You know? And then Mahaprabhu, like, in humorous divine humility, you know, this is through Bhaktivinoda Thakur we're getting this. Mahaprabhu is like, yes. He says, you know, actually I am very shy. And I to be in front of many people, to be shedding many tears in public, to be dancing in a very, you know, attention attracting way, I am very shy to do these things. And then he says, Nam Nat Jigurdev likes this look. Nam nache jeev nache nache premadan jagat nachaya mane kare palayan. Same. But it is not actually me dancing. It is the dancing of Harinam. Nam nache. The name is dancing. And that name, it's dancing in my heart. And that name is producing all these symptoms. These are actually the movements of Harinam himself. They're not the movements of me. Hari, you know, I'm being played by Harinam. Harinam is expressing these things through my body. Nam nache, jeev nache. My, you know, the name is dancing, my heart, my soul is dancing. Nache prema dhan. You know, this divine fortune of prema is being exhibited by me. Jagat nachai. And then, seeing me dancing, other people are dancing. Seeing them dancing, more people are dancing. gradually the whole universe has begun dancing. But it's the dance of Harinam himself. Nam nache, jeev nache, nache premadan, jagat nachai, maya kare payan. These are all being done by Harinam. All of this is happening by Harinam. Like me, I'm just shy, simple young man. But these symptoms come to me by the will of Harinam. We put this in Amnaya Tadva. Then Gurudev segues from there into Chaitanya Bhagwat and like sinks it as though it's the same conversation and he says, I complained actually. I was very shy about these things. And when my guru gave me Harinam, I went back to him. I said, what have you given me? What is this? What is this thing? After one of those really intense kirtans, the other day with the Charjamarsh, he ended the kirtan and just quoted that line of Mahaprabhu. Ki mantra dila gosai kare pug. I don't remember the exact line, but it means, what kind of mantra is this, man? It makes me puggle. What is this? That's what Mahaprabhu says to his guru. You gave me this, you just made me puggle. I don't know about this, So then Mahaprabhu's like confessing. He's like, this is all the movement of Harinam, and believe me, I thought it was crazy too. I even went back to my guru and told him, I don't know about this. So, in this way, Prakashananda was, then they talk more, and then Mahaprabhu, advises him, and Prakashananda just gives up his whole scene and leaves Kashi and everything that's in Jivadharma, etc. How did I get started on that? Tatvasar. So now Prakashananda is saying, what Mahaprabhu said is a shower of nectar. And what he's established to be the truth, that is definitely the truth. That is the supreme expression of the truth. Why? Because he's tasting it. Because he's realizing it. Because he can say so, and it's supreme. Because he's symptomatic of such supreme experience. Because it's real and it's authentic. And what he says is how he feels. And what he explains is what he sees. Alright. What time is it? Did I go over? Anyway, any comments of expressions of enthusiasm, happiness, or delight at this time? It doesn't give his name. It just says a Brahmin. Yeah, a disciple Brahmin.
I think the main thing is Sukriti. But to get Sukriti, that's like shouting the name. If you take him for Prasad, associate with the saint.
It's on the Mott website. You seen the Mott website lately?
No, I don't really have good access to it.
Okay. Anybody know the current words to live by quote? Anybody seen the current words to live by? But I mean, I'm just saying, what's on the website now?
No.
Does anyone know what that is? It says, good fortune comes through service. That's the quote. Which is, translation means seva produces sukriti. So in the practitioner stage, their seva isn't really seva. It's not like, like Shudamar described as a mock fight. They're practicing, and that, practice is leading them to the point where you can actually serve, Srila Govinda Maharaj has said, seva actually begins after liberation, like in an absolute sense. You're not really serving unless you're in a liberated state of consciousness. So, in our context, seva is part of our practice, and here, as Srila Govinda Maharaj is saying, it produces further sukriti, and also affects purification. So you can say, how do you acquire sukriti? By continuing to serve and practice. That increases one's sukriti, which increases one's ability to appreciate, like Gosami will give you a definition of sukriti, capacity to appreciate. Sukriti, and what is that? Sukriti ultimately is like a transformation of the concept of mercy. But it implies also acceptance and volition from oneself. Sukriti is done when you do something to serve, when you somehow serve, right? Like even if you just do parikrama around the mat, you know, like all these tourists do, they're showing some honor to the temple. So it's some act that they've done, but also that opportunity came to them from without, from beyond, or you can say it came down to them. So Sukriti is like the fusion of both mercy and action, or what Christians call like works and grace. It's the like substance generated by the fusion of those two things, which propels one into higher states of consciousness. Or you could say communion with Chaita Guru, or advanced association with the Mahant Guru, or another context is described as, you know, yeah, those two concepts actually describe it all. And that then through that, in like closer proximity to the source of mercy, and that increased desire within the heart, then more and more in strong forms of that substance can be produced. Until ultimately one is, you know, into a liberated state, meaning devoid of anartha and able to taste the divine substance, whereby one begins to serve in a liberated sense. You know, like one time Gurudev said, there are three stages in Krishna consciousness: sadhana, dasya ras, and madhura ras. As one to think about. Alright. Can we finish? Bhakti Luta, anything to say? Any comments? Any corrections? This is your... I consider it your bestowing your mercy upon me by sitting there. You're teaching me. Ramchandra?
Yeah, I was going to say one thing. Acharamraj, the last couple of days, been speaking about the, you know, Nishta, the Karuchi.
Yeah.
Brought up again at the chakra.
Achha.
The least resonant.
Okay.
I kind of was feeling this is paralleling.
Definitely.
What saying,
definitely.
Exactly, you know, like
definitely.
Being that, having that sincerity, serve, this will bring more taste, and kind of line of march.
Definitely.
A couple of days, kind of stressing on kind of that sincerity. So.
Yeah, did everyone catch that? When he was here the day before he left, he told that secret thing that Gurudev told him. Did everyone catch that?
I didn't catch it, but I knew he said something else.
He told it in Bengali. The idea is that unless one has ruchi for Shravan Kirtan, unless one actually has taste and attraction for engaging in Shravan Kirtan, their spiritual life is not secure. It's not guaranteed that they will stay in this line or not just deviate. That's only until they get ruchi are they, you know, like actually safe from deviation and losing the track.
And ruchi means appreciation.
Taste. Literally means taste. But it means it's the stage after nishta. It's like it means... Nishta means being sincerely, exclusively fixed in it. So, you know, ruchi basically means that you feel your self-interest and you feel naturally riveted and attracted to something. So it's like, it makes you safe because you have no interest in anything else. You know what I mean? Like now, what's our problem? We have all this taste for all these mundane things and it's distracting us constantly from serving. But if you know, that's his whole main shloka, Vishay, you know, if that type of loving attachment that you had for the things of this world, if you had it for the lotus feet of Guru and Vaishnava, you'd be all set. You know, there's a shloka used in the puja where Rupa Goswami is praying. That type of, you know, like, whatever it is that brings together, you know, teenage sweetheart lovers, I want to have that type of attraction for Krishna. That insatiable, like, intense desire that you'd even risk and ruin your whole life for, I want that kind of desire for Krishna. Because if I had that, nothing else could bother me, nothing else would deter me, nothing else would even matter. So that's a state of spiritual security, is a state of exclusive attraction and desire for Krishna. That's what that means. And you might be very dedicated or have done many things or have a lot of willpower or have a lot of knowledge or be in a particular place. You might have so many things. But if you don't really have that desire predominating your heart, you're not secure. That's the concept.
And the desire that comes from Sukriti.
Yeah, the desire. Well, the desire comes through Sadhu Sangha, which is arranged by Sukriti.
Oh, okay.
One of the, you know, you can say, how much Sukriti do I have in my life, and how do you measure that? To what extent have you found yourself in high association, in true sadhu sangha? That's the measurement of your Sukriti. Like in the scriptures it says, like in the Abhideya Tattva, it says, when one acquires sufficient Sukriti, then just the whole environment just goes, and someone gets sadhu sangha. It's just mystically arranged for them. You know, like, you hear devotee, you know, so many stories. One devotee is, like, getting drunk at a bar, and becomes a devotee before. He's just, like, doing any random thing in this world and comes across a Vaishnava. How did that happen? Sukriti, by some unseen will controlling the animation of this universe. So, Sukriti just makes it so you get sadhu sangha. Even without you realizing it. Just bam, you get it. That's why, like, Acharya Marshall talks about this, you know, Mahaprabhu, like, giving freedom to Raghunath or Sanatan, where it's like, if someone has Krishna mercy, nothing can in this world can detain him. Like, if it's Krishna's will that he comes into sadhu sangha or comes out from some terrible situation, nothing can check him, nothing can keep him. You know, like Bhakti Lalita, her life, you know, what happened in her is a perfect example of these high concepts, you know. How did she end up, like, at the lotus feet of Guru? You know, it's just like, it's completely inexplainable, other than with this kind of spiritual theory. Yeah, I mean, I'll think that it has some cause, but from a theoretical perspective, it's like really cool to think about, you know. So, how much, you know, do I have some Sukriti? You know, have I sat at the lotus feet of a Sadguru in Navadvip Dham? But then, you know, so in a worldly, you know, you could scale. How many people in this world have had that kind of fortune? You know, very few. So I must have much more Sukriti than most people. That you might think, oh, well, I've got a lot, you know. But then, in another scale, it's like, how much of that can I even appreciate? Then you go back to the beginning. Oh my, I have practically none. Like, I'm sitting here with everything, and like, I can't taste anything. I've got like this beautiful temple that's like an expressed manifest form of the heart of my guru in the abode of Mahaprabhu, and I've got all this affection, shining marble, effulgent Vaishnavas, Harinam Sankirtan echoing everywhere, and I like to sit on my computer and read the news. I like to make, you know, snacks for myself when I'm bored. Like, it's like, I've got everything! You know, but I have, like, you know, no appreciation. Correcto. Can also withdraw. Can be... Yes, exactly. Can also lose these things. Kurasya dhara nishina. It's the edge. It's an edge. It's very grand, but can also be spoiled. Okay, I'm just going on and on. I'm sure you guys are like eager to go do some seva and stop hearing me yap. Okay, Prabhu? We can talk later if you have more. Om Vishnupad Srila Bhakti Nirmal Acharya Maharaj Ki Jai. Om Vishnupad Jagadguru Srila Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Kulavaranyam Srila Bhakti Rakak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Bhagavan Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Thakur Ki Jai. Rupanu Guru Bhargava Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Srila Krishna Kaviraj Goswami Prabhu Ki Jai, Grantharaj Sri Chaitanya Charitamritam Ki Jai, Sparsha Jivan Mahaprabhu Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Vrinda Devi Tulsi Devi Ki Jai, Kul Kartal Ki Jai, Viraha Milan Samadhi Mandir Ki Jai, Samaveda Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Nitai Gaura Premanande!
Bhakti Kanav Yagi Maharaj.